Meta Productivity, the Next Level Personal Productivity Training by Yuria and John Novotny. Module 4, 33 Golden Nuggets of Productivity Wisdom. About this module. The main goal of this module is to help you think better about productivity. You will learn many new perspectives and mindsets here. This module aims to change the way you see the tactics and strategies of productivity. What you learn here will directly support your productivity. Many of the things you are going to learn will be applicable to non-work areas of your life as well, while other things might be just interesting food for thought. You can read this module independently of the other modules, or you can apply the knowledge you'll gain here in combination with the other modules. You might not understand everything you will read here right away, or you might not immediately know how to apply it, and that's okay. This module is unlike the previous ones. It contains lots of individual piecemeal insights and nuggets of wisdom. All of them can be helpful on their own, but you don't need to use all of them in order to get ahead. To get the most value out of this module, it might be best to reread it several times, in intervals of a few months or a year. Without further ado, let's get started. Number 1. Wisdom comes from multiple perspectives. Generally speaking, there are multiple correct perspectives on everything in life, including productivity. It's entirely possible that two experts will tell you two completely different things, and both will be right. What works in one context might not work that well in another one. Instead of looking for the one holy grail of anything, it's useful to learn about various approaches, learn their pros and cons, etc. Having multiple definitions of a concept increases its potential. Keep learning new perspectives to whatever subject you want to master in life. Picture your wisdom as a sparkling diamond. Every perspective you learn is like a facet on such a brilliant gem. The most beautiful and expensive diamonds have many facets. Keep learning new perspectives to add facets to your own brilliant diamond. This module will provide you with so many useful perspectives on productivity that even if you only remember or apply a small part of them, you might be considered a productivity genius by others. Number 2, productivity is ultimately emotional. We are emotional creatures, even if we don't like it or don't want to be. Value is ultimately judged by our emotions. Even when we try to decide rationally, emotions are usually the hidden drives behind our decisions. This is how Steve Pavlina puts it. Goals are ultimately emotional. There's no logical requirement to achieve anything. The mental aspects of goal setting are built upon the emotional foundation. Even the thought that goals can be purely logical is a value-based judgment, which is still emotional. To set and achieve goals, you must find something to care about. If you care about little or nothing, you will achieve little or nothing. The more you're willing to care about with your emotional investment, the more you can achieve. If you want to achieve something, you need to care about it. Number 3. What do you care about? What are your values? Since you've picked this book and want to be productive, you probably already care about something. Otherwise, you wouldn't want to be productive. But have you ever thought about what exactly you care about? What do you value? Do you know the underlying values that make you care about these things? Here's an important exercise for you. Number 1. Take a sheet of paper or open a text editor. Write what I value and care about on the top. Number 2. List as many things that come to mind as possible. Take your time. Number 3. Order them roughly by their importance. Do you see any patterns in what you've written? What's behind the most important items you've written? Do you value family, love, friendship, freedom, wealth, health, fun, exploration, joy, peace, adventure, comfort, security, growth, truth, honesty, pleasing everyone, knowledge, power, influence, wisdom? Tip: Steve Pavlina, a famous personal development blogger, has posted a list of over 400 values on his blog. You can scan it for inspiration. There are no wrong answers. There are your personal values. They are unique. The most important thing is that you know them. Creating such a list is important because if you want to be truly productive, what you care about and what you work on must match. If you have a mismatch, for example, you care about independence and creativity, but have a dull, stereotypical job with no say in it, you can never be truly productive. What you value and care about is ultimately a choice, albeit influenced by your upbringing. So make it a good one. By choosing what you care about, you can pick intelligent values. These rationally chosen values will then produce emotions to help you be productive and do lots of great work. By the way, once you clarify your own values, making many decisions will become easier for you. You will immediately know the right thing to do if you want to stay in integrity with your values. What you value and care about evolves over time. The list of your values would be probably quite different if you would have written it 10 years ago. Here's the bitter pill. It's usually much more intelligent to change your line of work than to change your innermost values. If you sell your soul, so to speak, you might regret it for the rest of your life. Your values are important to you for a reason. And if it's a good reason, settling for more convenient values might mean taking a wrong turn on your life's journey. Tip: are you ready for some brutal self-honesty? Create a second list of values, but this time, list the values that you actually live by day to day. These are your actual values. In reality, very few people live according to their ideal values, and putting the two lists of values, ideal versus actual, in contrast might help you understand yourself better and perhaps wake up and make some changes. The values are hierarchical, so what you value more usually wins over what you value less. Maybe you think that you value success, but you actually live according to the value of comfort, or the other way around. Number 4, care about the work you do. People who don't care about what they do can never achieve great things. They use their apathy as a self-defense mechanism and live uninspired lives. They fear the potential pain and thus shield themselves from it. However, this also shields them from the joy of achievement. They rob themselves of the happiness and energy they could experience if they cared about something and worked towards it. Caring is an emotional investment. When things go well, it brings you happiness and energy. When things go wrong, it brings you pain. In both cases, the intensity depends on how much you are emotionally invested. If you want to achieve great things, this emotional risk is unavoidable. In order to be productive, you need to care. A lot. In order to be emotionally invested, you need to risk feeling pain when things go wrong. You need to accept and embrace this risk. Yes, sometimes things go wrong and it's painful, but if what you do matters, it should be well worth it. Number 5, think upstream. Thinking upstream is about setting up conditions so the desired outcome will happen almost automatically and inevitably. For example, let's say you want to write a book. What conditions and systems could you set up so you will finish the book almost automatically? You could make a deal with your friend. For the next 30 days, you will email her every workday evening reporting how many pages you've written, and if you write less than 3 pages on any given day, or miss emailing the report more than once, you will donate $500 to her favorite charity. To protect yourself from the writer's block, make it acceptable to write random blabber if you have no inspiration at the moment. This is called free writing. It's described in the excellent book, Accidental Genius by Mark Levy. You could also schedule 90 minutes of uninterrupted writing time every morning and really make sure no one or nothing interrupts you at this time. It's just you, the word processor, morning coffee or tea, and a running countdown timer. Thinking upstream means that you work on a higher level. You change the environment and conditions so they keep driving you towards your goal automatically. Putting a condition in place is a one-time action that can help you multiple times. It's knocking over the first domino so the rest fall down automatically. It's a high-impact, super productive action. Thinking upstream can also help you with the little things. For example, if you always forget to do something, what could you do now to make sure that you won't forget to do it the next time? By failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail. Benjamin Franklin. Number 6, worthy work. By worthy work, I mean work that's worthy of you. You deserve worthy work. You should do worthy work. Worthy work puts some of your best talents and skills into practice, challenges you, not too little, not too much, it should be hard, but fun, fully engages you, is meaningful to you, has positive impact on your life and lives of others, helps you grow, inspires you and often others as well, is valuable to others and you. If you focus your efforts first and foremost on worthy work, you will have a much easier time motivating yourself, giving your best, and being remarkably productive. Better yet, you will be able to get great results and make a meaningful impact. Of course, there's also unworthy work. It's trivial, stereotypical, uninspiring, dull, boring, and doesn't involve your best talents and skills. If you get involved in unworthy work, being consistently productive becomes a struggle. By definition, unworthy work doesn't allow you to give your best, so you won't. Trying to attain peak productivity in work that's not worthy of you is like whipping a dead horse. Number 7, tasks versus outcomes. Outcomes are the results you want. Tasks are the actions you take in order to achieve these results. Never lose sight of your outcomes. Behind every task you do, there should be a good reason. It should be a step towards reaching an outcome. Don't mistake tasks for outcomes. No one really cares about tasks. It's the outcome that matters. Being busy is not important. Achieving your outcomes is. This is one of the reasons the productiveness framework described in the previous module includes a goal list and its daily review. Number 8, flow. You've experienced flow many times in your life. Flow is a state of mind that you enter when you're fully immersed in an activity. During the state, you're performing or learning optimally. Professionals and artists all around the world strive to get in the flow when they work. When you're in the flow, you're one with the activity you're doing. You feel aligned with the task and you're working on the task spontaneously, almost without effort. It feels great. In fact, it feels so good and you focus so deeply that you start ignoring everything but the task at hand, including hunger and tiredness. The deeper you're in the flow, the more outside impulses you ignore. For example, as I, John, was writing this book yesterday, I managed to get into the flow in the morning, and it wasn't until 5 p.m. that I realized I haven't eaten anything the whole time. I also realized that in this chunk of time, I made more progress on the book than I had in the past week, and I felt great for the rest of the day. Wikipedia has a nice example. Historical sources hint that Michelangelo may have painted the ceiling of the Vatican Sistine Chapel while in a flow state. It is reported that he painted for days at a time and he was so absorbed in his work that he did not even stop for food or sleep until he reached the point of passing out. After this, he would wake up refreshed and upon starting to paint again, re-enter a state of complete absorption. If you now think that flow can be dangerous, don't worry. The example before is truly an extreme case. You'll find many more mentions of the flow throughout history. Of course, this state of mind wasn't always called flow. Flow is a modern label created by Professor Csikszentmihalyi, who conducted research on flow states. Someone calls it the zone. Others say they're wired in. Some people in the IT sector use the term hack mode. Then there's the Taoist term doing without doing. Have you ever experienced flow? I'm sure you remember a time when you were doing something and it went really well. Then you suddenly realized several hours went by without taking a break or thinking of anything else. It happens to everyone. It's most common for sportsmen, musicians, writers, painters, and also gamers and software engineers. Children are often in the flow when they're playing with toys that require a level of logical thinking. When you get into the flow, the areas of your brain responsible for the observation of continual time actually start shutting down, as the mental resources get fully diverted into the task at hand. This is the reason why time is often subjectively distorted when in the flow. Time either speeds up or it slows down. Example, in critical sports moments. Have you ever read a good book that sucked you right into the story and time flew by as you kept reading? While you can't exactly enter the flow state at will, you can do several things to increase your chances of getting into the flow. Number 1, eliminate distractions and keep your mind clear so it can fully focus on the task you're currently doing. Follow the principles and tools you are learning in this book. These tools can help you free up mental resources so you can engage more fully with the work you are doing. This increases your chance of getting into the flow. Number 2, do something challenging enough to keep your attention fully. The task shouldn't be too easy, but it also shouldn't be overly difficult. Number 3, ideally, pick a task where you get direct, real-time feedback. The feedback can have many forms: the words you write, the paint on canvas, or even something like a score table. Good books that cover the flow state in detail include Flow, The Psychology of Happiness by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, and The Rise of Superhuman, Decoding the Science of Ultimate Human Performance by Stephen Kotler. Number 9, keep optimizing your efficiency. In order to attain peak productivity, you need to be constantly optimizing and simplifying your life. Optimizing your life is impossible without a daily routine. Therefore, establishing a routine in your life is crucial. The meta habit and morning and evening rituals can provide you with a routine that you can keep improving. Maintaining yourself in a state in which you can attain maximum personal productivity is an endless process. There will always be tweaks and improvements you can make. Kaizen is a Japanese word for continuous improvement, and it's a quite well-known philosophy used by companies all around the world. You can apply this idea to yourself. See your life as a business. Improve the processes, logistics, remove friction, prevent problems before they even happen, plan for contingencies, etc. Toyota and Canon have about 70 suggestions per employee every year shared and implemented. You don't have to necessarily make big changes, just keep a flow of steady improvements going. For example, keep eliminating all the little annoyances both in your work and personal life. The individual effects of optimizing your work and life will start compounding quickly. That being said, the law of diminishing returns, which we will discuss soon, applies here. So after several years, optimizing your life will start bringing smaller and smaller return on your invested effort. Optimizing your life can initially bring enormous results. For instance, implementing the Meta Habit and Productiveness Framework takes relatively little effort, yet it can easily double your productivity. Good questions to ask yourself: what are some of the obstacles I have to face each day? What are some of my daily tasks that take away my energy? What things keep annoying me? Your life is a very complex system. If you want it to work to the highest possible efficiency, you need to introduce changes in steps, observing and analyzing the results after each change. That's because each change alters the system, and the side effects of any given change may be unpredictable. The Meta Habit Tracker, described in Module 2, is so powerful in part because it allows you to optimize large chunks of your daily activity. Number 10, 7 Random Productivity Tips. Number 1, learn how to properly write down tasks. Be very specific about what needs to be done. Include actions, verbs, in the name of the task. Include the next action in the name of the task. Next action is the next immediate step that needs to be done. Keep ideas separate from your to-do list. Ideas clutter up your to-do list and may induce feelings of guilt and overwhelm. Number 2, choose your tools carefully and master them. Which keyboard shortcuts could save you time? Number 3, reading daily helps to keep you sharp, inspired, and creative. Reading right before bed is great. Number 4, meditating daily helps with focus and willpower. It builds your immunity to distractions. Number 5, there is no need to work on weekends. And if you love your work, there is no need to not work on weekends. You can also experiment with a 4-day work week. It's actually being successfully used in numerous companies. Whatever works for you. Number 6, setting time limits on your work and deadlines can actually boost your productivity. Mundane tasks can be more engaging when you have to do them under time pressure. When is it easier to write an essay? A month before it's due or the night before it's due? Number 7, keep experimenting and observing your own productivity. Notice when your most productive time of the day occurs. Notice what your most productive days have in common. Notice what your least productive days have in common. Number 11, don't force motivation, use your existing one. Do you have trouble with motivation? Let me, Yuri, share a story from my own life related to motivation. I started our software business when I was 15. I had a blast. There were so many things I had to learn and master. I worked every single waking moment. I was working 16 hours a day minus time spent in school, and I absolutely loved it. After about a year, I started earning lots of money, especially for a 16-year-old living in Czech Republic. However, after 2 years when I was 18, I had a motivational crisis. I had many wonderful projects that I wanted to work on, and I wanted to grow my business, but I just couldn't force myself to do it, and I didn't know why. So I tried to figure out, how can I motivate myself? I read dozens of articles, books, and talked to a few psychologists, but I still couldn't find the answer. However, at the time, I also got interested in girls. I was very shy, and I never talked to girls before. I was a computer geek, but girls started to fascinate me. I had no problems investing enormous energy and effort into understanding girls and spending time with them. Looking back now, it seems obvious to me. The career financial area of my life was already flourishing disproportionately, but the social romantic area of my life was doing poorly. So I subconsciously wanted to invest energy into the social area and not into building my income further. Since my material needs were small, I was already making more money than I could spend. The point is, I think there is always an area of your life that you were already motivated to improve. It can be very difficult to force yourself to improve some other area of your life instead, especially an area where you are already doing well. The good news is that the area you are already motivated to improve is usually your weakest one and improving it can oftentimes dramatically improve the quality of your life. Take advantage of your existing motivation by fully utilizing and pursuing it. That way, you can make huge progress with the least effort. It's an intelligent approach. Here's a powerful exercise for you. Write down all the areas in your life that are important to you. Write a few sentences or paragraphs about each of the life areas. Then rank each area on a scale of 1 to 10. Here are some examples of life areas for you to consider: career, financial, mental, learning, skills, etc. Emotional, romantic, health, spiritual, family, friends, home, fun, adventure, and purpose. Of course, there are also many others. With each area ranked 1 to 10, you can then make a bar chart, example in Excel, and visually map out where you are doing well and where you should put more effort. This exercise has been very eye-opening for me, so I do it repeatedly every few years. I think this might be one of the most valuable exercises in the Meta Productivity Training. Please do yourself a big favor and do it now. Don't continue listening until you do. Number 12, the dualities of productivity and success. Which of these values do you like more? You get to choose your approach in life. Choose wisely. Reactive or proactive? Distracted or focused? Complex or simple? Inner conflict or harmony of thoughts and emotions? Laziness or self-discipline? Clutter or clean, organized minimalism? Resistance or flow? Junk food or healthy food? TV or reading, travel, sports, spending time with family and friends, living? Facebook or meeting real people and making genuine connections? Treating symptoms, example, dumb down the pain, or treating the cause, example, remove the root of the problem? Scarcity, zero-sum game thinking, or abundance, win-win thinking? Focusing on getting money, or providing value and becoming truly successful and wealthy? Consuming or creating? Seeking stimulation or seeking meaning? Controlled by others or controlled by self? Racing mind or meditation and super focus? Being a victim or taking responsibility? Being rigid or being flexible? Dabbling or commitment? Afraid to try and fail or learning from failures? Emotionally estimating situations or rational thinking and writing? Procrastination or action? Wishes or plans and action? Lost in details or seeing the big picture? Bells and whistles or essence? Doing many things badly simultaneously or doing one thing well? Fear of difficulties or love of challenges? Instant gratification or big long-term payoffs? Number 13, flowing value. In the first module, we talked about how being productive means creating value. But if you're primarily creating value for others and not yourself, which applies to most work-related activities, what good is the value if it doesn't reach its recipients? If you're creating value, don't sit on it. Let it flow if at all possible. This mindset is best demonstrated on software. Today, no smart developer disconnects himself from the world for a few years while secretly working on software that will be perfect and flawless when it's released. It's much better to release a first version quickly and get the value to users, listen to feedback, and then improve the software regularly. It's a huge win-win. Users can use the software sooner, and the developer gets valuable feedback which will help him create better software. The flowing value principle doesn't apply only to software, it can be used for many kinds of work. For example, you can use it when writing books. When writing a book, you can write some of your key ideas first and let other people read them. What they tell you will help you create an even better book than if you worked on it secretly in isolation instead. You can also release some of the chapters on the internet even before the book is published. That way, you are flowing the value out into the world. If what you have is already useful, even if it's not fully finished, could it be beneficial to ship it? Number 14, the law of diminishing returns. The law of diminishing returns is a very useful concept. Wikipedia has a great example. The use of fertilizer improves crop production on farms and in gardens, but at some point, adding more and more fertilizer improves the yield less per unit of fertilizer, and excessive quantities can even reduce the yield. The law of diminishing returns is universal. For example, when you purchase new $100 running shoes, they might be 10 times better for running than your regular walking shoes. But if you purchase $200 running shoes, they won't be 20 times better than your regular walking shoes. They might be only slightly better than the $100 running shoes. The same law applies when doing just about any kind of work. There is always a point when additional improvements and polish start bringing fewer and fewer returns. It's crucial that you notice when this happens because at that point, it is best to move on to the next task. Number 15, 80-20 rule. You may have already heard about the 80-20 rule. The rule is also called the Pareto principle after Italian economist Vilfredo Pareto. The rule is that roughly 80% of the effects come from 20% of the causes. Pareto noticed that 80% of the land in Italy is owned by 20% of the population. He also observed that 20% of pea pods in his garden contained 80% of all the peas. He soon realized that the rule can be applied to nearly anything. You wear 20% of the clothes you own for 80% of the time. 20% of customers bring 80% of revenue. 20% of drivers cause 80% of the car accidents. 20% of tasks on your to-do list bring 80% of value, and so on. The 80-20 law should not be taken literally, but more often than not, a disproportionate distribution, similar to the one described by the 80-20 rule, can be actually observed. Sometimes the 80-20 rule is even more radical. For example, it might manifest as a 95-1 rule. Emmanuel Saez from UC Berkeley writes, "From 2009 to 2012, average real income per family grew modestly by 6.0%. However, the gains were very uneven. Top 1% incomes grew by 31.4%, while bottom 99% of incomes grew only by 0.4%. Hence, the top 1% captured 95% of the income gains in the first 3 years of the recovery." The rule isn't about the exact percentage. It can also be 70-30, etc. But about the principle of that a big percentage of effects always comes from a small percentage of causes. If you realize that this rule applies to nearly everything, it becomes clear that you should focus as much as possible on work that has the biggest payoff. Do 20% of the work that brings you 80% of the results. This will allow you to finish the tasks that actually matter much faster. Number 16, simplicity. Simplicity beats unnecessary complexity. If you feel like you aren't making progress quickly enough on some project, consider simplifying it. Can you remove the bells and whistles to get the core work done faster? As a rule of thumb, I always try to make things as simple as possible at first and then start enriching them, and only if it turns out to be necessary. Simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. Leonardo da Vinci. A simple and easy to understand design will always be valued more than a complex and hard to understand design. If you can't explain it to a 6-year-old, you don't understand it yourself. Albert Einstein. Number 17, celebrate your accomplishments. Our accomplishments should be celebrated. Celebrating your success allows you to step back and affirm that your work has meaning. Tracking your success creates a sense of meaning, motivates you, and helps you get back on track faster whenever you drop the ball. It also makes your accomplishments more memorable, which is important because if you can look back and see a long chain of success, it will have powerful positive effects on your self-esteem and future productivity. If you only live inside the daily grind without celebrating your progress, it's very easy to forget how far you've come already and get discouraged when things get tough. So, next time you accomplish something worthwhile, celebrate. Then write it down or post it somewhere. Start collecting these achievements. For example, you might want to keep a success log. In our company, we keep a success log for every year on our notice board, listing all our achievements for the given year. One can't help but feel good when reading that long list. Tip: create a visual achievements board. Set up a new real-life achievement board or just an achievement section on your existing board. It can be as simple as posting a label with achievements written on it and placing post-it notes below it with your progress whenever you achieve something important. You can also draw pictures or print photos of the individual achievements. Imagine how it could look in a few years, a huge visual gallery with all the great things you've accomplished. Wouldn't that be a source of powerful emotional fuel for further work? The achievement board can be digital too. For example, you can use a visual knowledge-based software, mine collected for Windows, or the web-based Trello. One final tip: Any tool for or a way of creating a vision board can also be used for creating an achievement board. The difference is simply that the achievement board displays only the things that you've already accomplished. Number 18, put your work inside your life, not the other way around. What's more important to you, your lifestyle or your work? This is a trick question. You can either determine what kind of lifestyle would you like to have and then design your work approach around it, or you can determine what kind of work approach you would like to have and then design your lifestyle around that. It's a big difference. You either live inside your work or work inside your life, depending on what comes first. It's best to determine your ideal lifestyle first and then figure out how to accomplish all your work goals around that. If you build your lifestyle around, inside your work, you will probably have a harder time disconnecting from your work at the end of the workday, which is crucial for rejuvenation and maintaining high energy. But even more importantly, one of the reasons you want to work a lot is probably because you think that success will allow you to have a great lifestyle. But chances are you can have that lifestyle right now. Also, if you don't start doing what you want to do in your life now, you may never do it. There will always be another project, another goal, another deal, another job. Don't wait for retirement to enjoy your life. Who says that you can't have both great lifestyle and be exceptionally productive? It's possible. If you decide what kind of life you want first and then design your work approach around that, it will unleash your creativity and you will eventually figure how to do that. There is almost always a way. You don't have to sacrifice everything for your work. In fact, if you do, you will likely damage your productivity in the long run. Don't undervalue the importance of happiness. The hours spent working don't count. What counts is what you accomplish inside those hours. If you are super energetic, well-rested, happy, and fulfilled, chances are you will accomplish a lot. Studies show that the typical American worker accomplishes about 2 hours worth of work inside the 8 hours he spends at work each day. If you become efficient, you can spend much less time at work and still achieve more than the average person. For example, you can have 4-day or 3-day work weeks, or you can take 4 months off every year. You would be surprised how many successful people do that. By increasing their efficiency and hourly rate, they can take a lot of time off. So, what would your ideal lifestyle look like? Think about it and write it down. Then brainstorm how you could move closer towards that vision. Even if you move just 10% closer to it compared to where you are now, you will be happier and likely more productive as well. Number 19, it's written or forgotten. If you don't write something down, assume you will forget it. If something is worth remembering, it's worth writing down. Number 20, it's written or it's haunting you. If you don't write something important or semi-important down, it will drain your mental energy. It will consume your mental resources and clutter your mind. As a rule of thumb, write relevant things, such as tasks, down. The simple fact that you don't have to remember them then is very freeing. Number 21, start with the worst. Begin with the worst task for the day. Begin with what is most difficult or what you fear the most. In the book, Get Everything Done and Still Have Time to Play, Mark Forster shares excellent insight. If you do first what you resist the most, things will get only easier from that point and you will be completely energized by the end of the day, not drained. Number 22, decisiveness. Making a decision is usually far better than making no decision and postponing it instead. Making decisions cost you energy, but postponing decisions cost you even more total energy. There are two kinds of decisions. Number one, decisions that you can't change later or can change later but for a high price. And number two, decisions that you can change on the way. The majority of decisions are this type. Make these decisions fast. It doesn't matter if you use your intuition or rationality to make them. Just make them quickly and move on. Undecided matters are one of the top roadblocks to productivity. Also, aim to remove unnecessary decisions from your daily life completely. As you go through your day, you have to face many decisions and mundane tasks. Some of that is necessary, but most of these decisions and mundane activities can be either eliminated or simplified. If you simplify your day, you will have more time and mental resources available. Increased productivity is a natural result. Let me give you a specific example. President Obama has suits in just 2 colors, navy and gray. All he has to decide is if he's going to wear gray or navy that day. "You'll see I wear only gray or blue suits," Obama said. I'm trying to pare down decisions. I don't want to make decisions about what I'm eating or wearing because I have too many other decisions to make. He mentioned research that shows the simple act of making decision degrades one's ability to make further decisions. Steve Jobs went even further. He had only one kind of clothes, blue jeans and a black turtleneck. Albert Einstein did the same thing. Mark Zuckerberg also has his signature hoodie. So if you decide to make your life simpler by streamlining your wardrobe, you are in good company. Incidentally, wearing the same clothes every day has another interesting side benefit. It helps with personal branding. The more public your work is, the more it can help to build a strong personal brand. Your name, plus face, plus clothes can quickly become easily recognizable. Personal branding is useful even if your line of work isn't public. For one, your friends and acquaintances will have a much easier time spotting and recognizing you when they encounter you, which will give you some otherwise missed opportunities for meeting them. It will be also easier to remember you. Another advantage is that you will save time by shopping at least several days every year. If you are a woman, you might find the above advice horrifying. However, think about it. Wouldn't this actually be empowering, especially because you are a woman? As an added benefit, you could potentially save up to several thousand dollars per year on dressing up. Number 23, pre-deciding. The easiest way to remove decisions from your life is to pre-decide them in advance so you always know what to do and thus don't have to decide anymore. Try to list all the decisions you have to face each day. What to wear? What to eat for breakfast, snack, lunch, dinner? What to do first when you arrive at work? What to do first when you arrive home from work? When do you see your friends? When do you call your mom or dad? When do you clean the kitchen, windows, floors, anything else? For example, with breakfast, you can either decide each day what you are going to eat or pre-decide that you will eat oatmeal on Mondays, a banana smoothie on Tuesdays, etc. You could even have exactly the same breakfast every day, like I do. It might seem that stereotype wants to take away your freedom, but the opposite is true. Routine gives you freedom. It allows you to focus on what truly matters instead of being trapped by everyday mundane life and its endless demands, which are repetitive anyway. You want to spend your energy on what truly matters and breeze through the rest of your daily life as efficiently and effortlessly as possible. This doesn't mean you can't enjoy all this pre-decided stuff. For example, I always look forward to my breakfast and I enjoy it very much. It just means that life becomes easier for you. Some decision-making can be delegated to others. Example, let the person cooking choose the meal. Or to technology, shuffle on your MP3 player. If you manage a team, you do not want every single decision to go through you, making you both stressed and a bottleneck. Delegating decision-making is one of the most important leadership skills. Number 24, expected value. Expected value, or EV, is a concept from probability theory. It's extremely useful because it can help you make better decisions in daily life. It's commonly used by professional poker players, financial traders, economists, scientists, and sophisticated businessmen. The expected value of some event is its payoff times its probability. Let me give you an example. Let's say that you are working on a proposal. If the proposal is accepted, you will earn $5,000, so the payoff is $5,000. However, you think that there's only a 50% chance that the proposal will be actually accepted. As such, the expected value of this proposal is $2,500. The calculation is simple, 5,000 multiplied by 0.5. If you send the proposal, you will get, on average, $2,500. Thinking like this might not make sense intuitively at first because the deal either goes through and you get $5,000, or it doesn't go through and you get nothing. So why should you value sending the proposal at $2,500? The reason is simple. This is not the only decision you will ever make. In your life, you make decisions like this one all the time. If you make choices with a higher expected value, then overall, in the long run, you will do better than someone who chooses options with lower expected value or who doesn't think about expected value at all. The expected value of sending the proposal is $2,500, and the expected value of not sending the proposal is $0. Learn to think like that. Similar example. Let's say you can send an email that might land you a $30,000 contract. The chance that it will be accepted is only 5%, though, so you think sending the email is pointless. However, if you calculate the expected value, you will see it is $1,500. Is $1,500 worth sending the email to you? If it is, it makes sense to send the email, even though there's only a small chance it will result in the $30,000 contract. If you send enough emails like this, you will get $1,500 per email on average. Now, let's say that you also have the option to make the email elaborate and include some charts. This will take you 4 hours of extra work, but you think it will double the likelihood you get the contract. So the probability goes from 5% to 10%. Now, the expected value becomes $3,000, or $1,500 more. Is $1,500 worth 4 hours of your work? If it is, it makes sense to put in the extra work. Sometimes you will make a good decision with positive expected value, and it won't work out. But if you understand the expected value concept, you will be completely fine with it. You will know that you've actually made the right decision even if it didn't work out, and that you are going to win eventually. You can calculate the expected value of just about everything. Every time you put on a helmet when riding a bike, you will prolong your life, on average, by a certain number of hours. Every time you buy a lottery ticket, you will lose, on average, a certain amount of money. When the expected value is much lower, 50 cents, than the price of the ticket, $1, it's a net loss. When you roll a six-sided dice, you will get, on average, a result of 3.5, and so on. Where can you get an edge by calculating the expected value? Once you start thinking like this in your daily life, it won't be long before you start getting better results. Calculating the expected value is most useful when making deals, making financial decisions, and evaluating risk. Number 25, have a long-term focus. You should always know what you're currently focusing on in life. I recommend establishing your long-term primary focus by asking yourself a question. If I were to focus on just a single area in my life, which one would increase the quality of my life the most? In other words, which area of your life would bring you the most happiness and fulfillment if you were to focus on it for the next 3 to 5 years? Having a long-term focus is very similar to having a goal, but it's more general. So you want to come up with something as broad as my health, career, finances, relationships, etc. Having a long-term focus is like having a theme for your life. You can change this theme anytime you want, but it's best to change it only after you've achieved significant results in the previous one. When you're making big or important decisions, keep your current long-term focus in mind. It should probably be one of your main decision-making factors. Ask yourself, will this help me in the area I am currently focused on or distract me? When we aren't focused on anything, chances are we're stagnating. Life is moving around us like a strong wind around a boat on the sea, except our sails are down, so our boat moves randomly with the sea. We need to put our sails up, set our primary long-term focus in life, and start moving boldly in that direction. It has been said that people tend to underrate what they can achieve in the next 3 to 5 years and overrate what they can achieve in 1 year. If you are strongly focused, you can achieve almost anything in 5 years. In 5 years, you can have great health and body, the ideal family, fantastic friends, incredible wealth, fame, or your own organization with tremendous positive impact on the world. Just about anything you want. All it takes is focus and consistent action. The Meta Habit and the Productiveness Framework can help you with both. Number 26, attention is a precious resource. There are two kinds of focus, long-term focus and immediate focus. Both are critical to achieve our goals. The immediate short-term focus is also called attention. Today, our attention is a scarce resource, perhaps our most precious one. Corporations and media are fighting for it with all their might, and it's critical that we defend it. If our attention becomes fragmented and our mind distracted, we won't be able to put our full attention into our work and personal activities. We won't be able to make meaningful progress anymore. It is the quantity and quality of our attention that determines whether we succeed in any endeavor or not. Scattered attention is far less powerful than focused attention. For example, consider the difference between a light bulb and a laser. They both consume the same amount of energy, but a laser can cut through metal. It's the focus that makes the difference. The only way to get into the flow state is by putting our full attention to the task at hand. Think about the average office worker who has various tasks he needs to do on his computer. If he can put all his attention to the task at hand, he simply starts working, focusing on one task, finishes it, and moves on to the next task, finishes it and moves on to the next task again, and so on until his work is finished. Every completed task brings him satisfaction from a job well done. However, if his attention is scattered, a more common scenario, he will sit in front of the computer not really focusing on anything, hopping from one thing to another, having multiple programs and windows open, his mind racing and thinking about various random things. He's very inefficient, distracted, and anxious. Which of the two workers would you rather be? By the way, multitasking is an illusion. You can't really be working on two things at the same time. When you attempt to do multiple things at once, your mind rapidly switches from one thing to the other one. Unfortunately, this is extremely inefficient. In fact, it has a similar effect as lowering your IQ by 10 points. If you try to do multiple tasks at once, you will do a poor job and it will take longer as compared to putting your full attention to the one task at hand until it's finished, then moving on to the next one. There's an old saying, "He who chases two rabbits catches none." Today, many people are chasing 10 rabbits. Guess how that's going to work out for them? You can increase your productivity by reclaiming and guarding your attention, by thinking about it as a valuable resource and putting it fully to the task at hand until it's finished. Finishing things one by one will also make you happier than having a lot of work-in-progress projects on your plate. Tip: when working on mentally demanding tasks, it's beneficial to take a break every 60 to 90 minutes. When you finish working on something, restart your focus and mind, change the channel, so to speak. Go for a walk, eat a snack, play a musical instrument, or do some quick exercise. Switch to a completely different mode for a while and stop thinking about work. After the quick break, you will be ready to tune into the next task and focus on it fully. Tip: you can schedule your interruptions. Most interruptions are not important. Example, someone gets an idea and calls you impulsively. If you make it so that people can't interrupt you much, they will figure out how to solve the problem by themselves. You don't have to solve it for them. Say to the world, "I am not interested in being interrupted, except in this brief time frame, 4 to 5 p.m. Remember that just because a phone is ringing, it doesn't mean it must be answered. When someone messages you because he is bored, you don't have to drop your focus and start chatting with him. How to improve your focus and attention. There are several powerful ways to improve your focus. Elimination of distractions. Instant notifications of any kind, cluttered desk, cluttered computer desktop, open software that you don't need, constant checking of email or social media, checking of news sites, all that devastates your productivity. Eliminating the sources of distractions has huge positive effects on your focus. Just close and put away everything that you don't need for the task at hand. Elimination of interruptions. Too many people walking in on you, too many phone calls, too many instant messages and notifications. You can almost always eliminate these interruptions by instructing others to use email instead. Simply tell people that if it's not an emergency, you prefer email contact. Second, establish do not disturb times and explain to others that during these times, you work on important projects and do not wish to be disturbed. Use time boxing techniques such as Pomodoro. In case you have never heard of it, Pomodoro technique is a simple productivity technique with a kitchen timer. It's called Pomodoro because Pomodoro means tomato in Italian, and many kitchen timers are shaped like a tomato. Pomodoro works like this. You get any kind of timer, set it for 25 minutes and work. During the 25 minutes, you focus 100% just on the task at hand. Once the time is up, you take a short break and schedule another block. The original Pomodoro technique is 25 minutes work with 5 minutes break, and every 4 Pomodoros earn a larger 20-minute break. You can use any time interval you want. I, Yuri, personally like to use 50 minutes work, 10 minutes break, stretching, water, 50 minutes work, and 30 minutes break, short brisk walk and a small meal. This practice keeps my energy high during the day. Meditation. Meditation is pure focus. It is the perfect attention training, but it has also many other benefits. For instance, research shows that meditation permanently increases your level of happiness. A study at the University of Wisconsin by Richard Davidson, a psychologist who has practiced meditation for decades, confirmed that meditation can alter brain structure, increase your empathy, even make you look healthier and more approachable. And it's free. Consider making meditation a daily habit. Even 5 minutes of meditation a day will give you significant positive results in 30 days. You will notice that you can focus much better and longer and that your mind is not racing around so much. Meditating is easy. Just focus on your breathing and try to keep your mind clear. If any thought emerges, gently discard it and refocus on your breathing. That's it. Thinking aloud. One powerful technique of focusing and keeping attention on the task at hand is thinking aloud. By saying your thoughts aloud and commenting what you are doing, you can concentrate better and think clearer. Of course, this is not always possible. When working in a room with other people, for example, but even then, you can go for a walk and think aloud about what to do next. Another benefit of giving voice to your thoughts is that it can motivate you to take more action. Athletes do this all the time. It also works great when solving difficult problems, often quickly leading to an elegant solution. Tip: thinking aloud is also an excellent way to improve your articulation and active vocabulary. Think of the prominent Greek orator Demosthenes. He was born with a speech defect almost 400 years BC, yet people remember him today as the most famous ancient Greek orator. We use the words philippic for daring speeches only because of how Demosthenes spoke against the Macedon king Philip II. To overcome his speech defect, Demosthenes stood on a seacoast, shouting down the breaking waves with his mouth full of pebbles. He talked to himself for days at a time. That's how he became the most famous orator. Thinking aloud can also help with learning. By saying a word aloud, you're activating the corresponding visual memory. People who voice the name of the thing they're looking at are going to remember it longer because they created an extra neural association. It works the other way around, too. When you're searching for something, you can say what you're looking for aloud, which then automatically brings the visual image into your brain. Then you're going to have an easier time locating it. In childhood, all of us talk to ourselves. But once we grow up, we suddenly think that it's weird and crazy. However, by speaking aloud to yourself, you're simply giving voice to your internal thought process, making it stronger and pushing out all the other distracting thoughts and impulses. Number 27, beware the gray zone. The gray zone is a state of mind in which you're not really focused on anything. It's a state of multitasking, distractions, mental fog, escapism, unproductive business, and stimulation seeking. Typically, you don't get much done when in this state. The gray zone is the biggest, time-sucking black hole in our lives. We, Yuri and John, are pretty sure that the gray zone took a big chunk of our lives as well. It's easy to fall into the gray zone and difficult to escape it. To escape, you need to stop for a moment, then observe yourself and what you are doing in order to realize that you're actually wasting time. Have you ever said to yourself, "Geez, what am I doing here?" Let me give you an example. Imagine the average office worker. Let's call him Bob. Bob has some work to do at his laptop. He is a hardworking fellow, so he opens his laptop in the morning and starts to work on his most important task. But since he didn't fully focus on the task right away, he thought it couldn't be a bad idea to check his email. Heck, there could be some important messages for him. He sees nothing urgent, a few work-related emails he should reply to, but he won't do that now. After all, he is working on the important task right now. While he's at it, he also goes to check the news and take a peek at what's happening on Facebook and Twitter. Bob might check some stats as well. What? Is it 10 a.m. already? He really should take a break and get his coffee fix. He drinks the coffee at his computer. That was relaxing. Now Bob is ready to start working on the important task again. Except, he decides he should probably reply to those emails he didn't reply to earlier. After all, there are people waiting for his reply. While checking email, he notices a new message with a funny YouTube video. He just has to see this one. It's only 2 minutes long. And while he's at YouTube, he might as well check out a few more recommended videos. Okay, back to business. Replies are sent. Time for Bob to do some real work. He finally works on the important task. Unfortunately, before he can make any real progress, it's time for lunch. After lunch, he does some random busy tasks just to get into the working mood again. His coworker interrupts him, so he chats with her for a while and then spends the next 15 minutes daydreaming while shuffling papers around. After that, Bob decides to check out a few of his favorite websites. I think you get the idea. Long story short, Bob spent his whole day working at his computer while getting none of his important work done. You might think that the example is absurd and extreme, but it's very real. This scenario plays out with millions of people around the world every day. This is the gray zone. According to various studies, the average office worker gets between 1.5 hours and 2.9 hours worth of real work done in the 8-hour day. The sad thing is that Bob doesn't even realize how much time he actually wasted working while not accomplishing anything. He will feel exhausted after a long day at work in the evening. From his perspective, he wasn't just wasting time, he was working. So how do you break free of the gray zone? I recommend taking a quick reality check from time to time. Are you doing what you should be doing? Even when you're in the gray zone, you will often realize that you're not working on the right task. This is your opportunity to stop, get up, reset your mental state, collect your attention, and fully refocus on the important task. You have to overcome inner excuses, though. The voice in your head might say things like, "This is important too. I still have plenty of time to do the real work. I can quickly check this, it will only take a minute, and then I can begin." Basically, you need to beware of any line of thinking or actions that postpones doing the really important work. Once you realize that you are not doing what you should be doing, the battle is half won. You are now present in reality and the mental fog dissipates. Now get up, reaffirm what you should be doing, and then begin immediately. Do the smallest step possible immediately. Open that document you need to work on and write something. Of course, anything that helps you focus and pay full attention to the task at hand will also help you stay out of the gray zone. Eliminating, or at least scheduling, distractions and interruptions is important if you want to be able to focus. Tip: what you are doing when you are not doing what you should be doing is the problem. If you can make it so that you can't do the wrong thing anymore or make it difficult for yourself to do it, it can help you stop doing it and do the right thing instead. For example, you can block distracting websites or put junk food out of sight. Work on both fronts. Make the right thing easier to do and the wrong thing more difficult to do. Number 28, don't be persistent on the means, but on the outcome. Let's say that you want to dig a big hole in the ground. If you are persistent on the means and start digging the hole using a spoon, it will take you a year. However, if you are flexible, then when a colleague suggests to you to use a shovel instead, you will do so and you will finish digging the hole in just a few days. Of course, this example is ridiculous. Everyone knows that shovel is better than a spoon for digging a hole. However, in the world of business, technology, and personal efficiency, it's not always obvious what's the spoon and what's the shovel. Keep your eyes open for new approaches and better ways of doing things. Be persistent on your goal, but not on the tools and means that allow you to achieve it. Ponder this. Where in your life are you possibly digging with a spoon? Where are you possibly rejecting advice to use a shovel? Number 29, don't waste your willpower. Think of willpower as the fuel you burn to keep yourself doing the right things. Much like the fuel for your car, you can burn all your willpower. When you have no willpower left, it will be impossible to do anything that demands it. Fortunately, unlike gasoline, your willpower regenerates when you rest. It's completely restored when you sleep, but you can also restore it during the day by doing anything relaxing or fun that feels empowering. We will burn willpower when we perform complex cognitive tasks, make decisions, moderate our social behavior, and overcome resistance to difficult work. By adding habits into your life, you can reclaim a significant amount of your willpower. Actions performed habitually don't cost us virtually any willpower, as compared to actions that we have to accomplish using sheer willpower. Every time you perform a non-habitual action, you have to decide if and when to do it. This costs willpower. It's best to turn all activities that you do often into habits. This practice will eliminate a lot of unnecessary decision-making, which is taxing on your willpower. Some artists have a personal manager to make the most of the decisions for them. The manager isn't hired merely for the artist's comfort. The artist is simply delegating most of her decision-making to someone else, so she's still capable of doing her craft instead of being mentally exhausted. You have the most willpower early in the morning. Schedule the most important activities and new habits early in the day. The meta habit is a powerful and simple way of introducing habits into your life. Tip: to recharge your willpower, eat a banana, an apple, or a protein bar, go for a walk, take a nap, take a shower, or exercise for a while. Taking a walk and eating a small meal are scientifically proven ways of recharging your willpower. Tip: whenever you notice that you are doing something silly, inefficient, or wrong, stop. Stop yourself for a moment and say aloud or write down what's happening. Then recharge your willpower. Get up and walk for a while, eat something small, and get back on track. Number 30, happy person is more productive than unhappy one, and being happy is a choice. You can't be productive if you aren't happy. It makes sense that you won't do your best work when you're in a bad mood. A radical idea is that happiness isn't something that just happens. Happiness is an active choice. When you're feeling down, you suddenly won't just feel happy. You need to decide that you want to be happy. Nevertheless, there are biochemical processes that can help you to feel happy, and you can use that to your advantage. How do you keep your emotions on the positive side? There are two great ways to lighten up your overall mood. Number one, exercise. Physical activity is a guaranteed mood improver. Just get moving. It's not a rocket science. Even going for a walk helps a great deal. When you're physically active, endorphins are released into your system. These neuropeptides make you happy. Number two, do the activities you love. For some of us, it's listening to good music. For others, it's going to a park with a good book or spending the evening in great company. What is it that you love? Could you do it more often? Could you do it every day? The best and most beautiful things in the world cannot be seen or even touched. They must be felt with the heart. Helen Keller. A thing to keep in mind is that emotions largely define who you are, so it's always good to express them. If you don't express your emotions, you're hiding who you are. By suppressing emotions, you might wind up in a wrong place in your life where it's significantly harder for you to maintain happiness and a productive state of being. Children are an excellent example of how we should deal with emotions. You can tell when a child is happy, when they're sad, when they like something, and when they don't. Children don't suppress their emotions, they express them. Everything seems simple for children. They cry one second and laugh the next. They enjoy the little things. You don't see a small child getting angry over something just to bury it inside and be resentful for the next few months or years. No, the child cries and then they laugh again. It's good to release your emotions instead of holding them inside because that always takes its toll. One thing you can't hide is when you're crippled inside. John Lennon. Next time you feel like crying or having a laugh, just do it. Number 31. What makes you feel motivated? Do it more often. Look at motivation as an emotion. Like any other emotion, motivation is fleeting. It can't last forever. To stay motivated, you need to repeatedly re-motivate yourself. First, you need to find your trigger. Do you remember what made you feel motivated the last time? Right before you felt the surge of motivation, what were you doing? Were you thinking and writing about your life by journaling? Were you listening to a personal development audiobook or video that was really inspiring? Perhaps you were pumped up after vigorous exercise and you transferred the energy into work. Or was it thinking about your ultimate goal that motivated you? Once you realize what brings out the powerful emotions in you, do it more often. It's simple as that. If exercise pumps you up and keeps you motivated, could you exercise more often? If you get motivated after discussions with a particular friend, could you perhaps meet with him or her regularly? I, John, consider myself lucky because my trigger is music. When I listen to epic, yes, the genre is actually called epic, music, I literally get goosebumps. I feel like a superhero. I want to get things done, now. In fact, I'm listening to music while working on this. One more tip, think big. You need to have enough big goals. Having a goal that is too big is much better than having one that's too small. The possibility of being able to say, "Yes, I've accomplished this unreasonable and seemingly impossible thing to do," is much more motivating than the possibility of being able to say, "Yes, I've achieved this small goal as expected." If your goal is too big and you fail, it still hurts far less than failing to accomplish something minor and uninspiring. Number 32, what to do when you drop the ball. When I wake up and feel off, the whole day might be a mere shadow of its usual potential. Even the simplest tasks can be a struggle and I'm easily distracted. However, the good news is that I can usually track this bad day to something I did the previous day. Often it's something outside the usual routine. For example, a late meal, a late return home, or a stressful event. Sleep quality and quantity is important not just for your health, but also because it determines your state after you wake up. So far, my solution is to carry on with my morning ritual, which helps quite a bit, although it takes me longer to finish when I am in such an off state. However, it also acts as my safety net. It ensures that I won't fall into some abyss and lose a whole week. The next day, I am usually at or close to my peak state again. When you have a bad day, it's important to do these things. Number one, be kind to yourself and don't obsess over it. Know that it will pass. All successful people and achievers experience bad days. It's completely normal. Most people don't even notice there are bad days because they simply don't strive for excellence. Number two, make sure that tomorrow will be better. Get back to basics, sleeping and eating well. Simplify your morning and evening rituals today if you must, but do them. Number 3, do the best you can today. Even if you do just one simple task, 1 minute of exercise, prevent yourself from eating a bunch of junk food, and go to sleep early, it's still a big success. Number 4, consider taking a day or more off. When is the last time you had a day off to truly relax and recharge? Definition of relaxation is something you usually don't do. Even if you relax on weekends, maybe you need to relax differently. It may still be draining you in some way. If you take a day off, it's important to do it without feeling guilty. You wouldn't accomplish much today anyway, and resting today will increase your productivity tomorrow and in the days ahead. Number 5, do some journaling, thinking and writing, as it will elevate you. In writing, think about A. What might be the cause of your bad state and how could you fix it? Is it lack of sleep? Bad meal in timing or quality? Some open loop in your relationships? An unresolved work issue? B. What can you do today to make tomorrow better? C. What could you accomplish today even in your bad state? Perhaps some less demanding, less important, or maintenance task that you've been putting off for some time. D. Consider taking a day off. Did you rest, relax, and recharge enough lately? Here's a journaling template for your off day. Today I am in a bad state, but it's okay, it will pass. How do I feel? What could be the cause of my bad state today? What can I do today to make tomorrow better? What could I realistically accomplish today even in my bad state? Should I take a day off today or sometime soon? When and how did I last rest, relax, and recharge myself? How could I truly rejuvenate myself today? If I brought 5% more consciousness to my situation, I would blank. It's miraculous how much can journaling elevate you and disperse the mental fog. Bad days happen to all super achievers, but they always pass and are not worthy of neurosis. Know this, your bad day is still probably better than a good day of the average unorganized person who's not trying to be productive. Number 33, beware of your Enneagram pitfall. Enneagram is a personality model. There are whole books on it, so we won't go too deep here. However, I would like to give you valuable insights from studying the Enneagram personality types as they relate to productivity, success, and efficiency. In the Enneagram personality model, there are 9 types total. Most of them can experience great challenges when it comes to personal productivity. When you read the following descriptions, think only about yourself. Don't think about other people for now. We are talking about you here. Heads up, these types are described in a negative way, so it might not be exactly pleasant to recognize yourself in one or more of the types. Please put your ego aside while reading the following. The 9 types are: Number 1, perfection. You want to be perfect and you want everyone else to be perfect as well. You build up hidden resentment and anger when things or people are not perfect. You usually try to hide your anger because expressing it would be imperfect. Number 2, flattery. You please others and sacrifice for them to buy their love. You might then try to manipulate them by creating guilt in them by reminding them of all the nice, unasked-for things you've done for them. Number 3, vanity. You are the go-go-go workaholic. Everything is about success. Failure is the worst thing that can happen to you. Number 4, melancholy. You are the tragic, romantic, creative type who imagines an ideal world but is sad because the real world is crude. You see yourself as someone special and deep. Other people seem shallow. Number 5, stinginess. You observe rather than participate. You're stingy with resources and time. You don't like sharing. Number 6, cowardice. You are overprepared paranoiac. The Boy Scout, always ready for the worst. Number 7, planning. You are an idealist who creates ideal outcomes in his imagination. You focus on the positive but ignore the negative. You avoid pain and are narcissistic. You plan but don't execute. Hard work and taking action is not your strength. Number 8, vengeance. You are the boss-judge type who believes that justice must be served. People at fault must be severely punished, possibly including yourself. Number 9, indolence. You always see both sides of everything, and thus it seems meaningless to you to do anything at all. You don't like conflict and have low energy. You prefer status quo. Which type do you think describes you best? You will hate the answer if you answer honestly. Here is how each of the types is limited and what you can do about it. Perfection. If you want to be perfect, you will always be disappointed because the truth is that you can never be perfect. It's an unattainable ideal. You also want others to be perfect, and they might despise you because of it. You build up hidden anger and resentment, and others can feel it. However, the real problem is when you want your work to be perfect and don't know when to say, it's good enough. Finish it and move on to the next big thing. There is an enormous amount of unfinished work in the world, and a great deal of it was never finished due to the perfectionism of its author. The solution is to accept that you are imperfect, others are imperfect, and absolutely perfect work doesn't exist. Stop over-polishing your work. That brings very little value to the table, if any. Your talent and energy can be utilized better by working on the next thing and finishing things. Flattery. The trap here is that if you work hard to make others happy but neglect yourself, you will end up being miserable. Others might not always appreciate your hard work the way you would like. Others don't want to be forced through guilt to like you and appreciate you. Look what I've done for you. Now you must like and appreciate me. The cure for you is simple. You should always take care of your needs and yourself first. And only then can you go and make others happy. But this time, you won't need anything from them in return. They'll feel it and will be more likely to sincerely appreciate what you do for them. Vanity. The trap here is workaholism and over-efficiency. For one, you can get disconnected from your body. Chronic pain, carpal tunnels, cardiac arrests, and death from overwork, karoshi, can follow. You might also get disconnected and alienated from other people. If someone can't be useful to you, you won't want to have anything to do with them. Finally, you get disconnected from yourself and get lost in your work. The solution here is to keep yourself grounded and keep things in perspective. I think that the best way to do this is through thinking in writing, journaling, and deep conversations with people you care about. Take a few days off and spend some time in nature with notepad and a pen. Think about the big picture and don't take any tablets, computers, or smartphones with you. Melancholy. The trap here is that you keep draining yourself of energy and are constantly depressed in one way or another. This happens because you keep imagining an ideal world, but the real world is nothing like it. The solution is to accept the world as it is. Then you can start working towards a better world without feeling miserable. Also, it might be hard to swallow, but realize that your misery doesn't make you special. For you, being miserable is the easy way out, and there's nothing special about that. Stinginess. Your ideal is wisdom. However, when you keep observing, observing, and observing without participating, you might gain knowledge but not true wisdom. True wisdom only comes from the combination of knowledge and experience. If you don't participate in the world, you will never have the necessary experience to be truly wise and won't succeed in fulfilling your true potential. Being stingy with time and resources can also limit your ability to make critical investments and build important relationships. The solution is to start focusing on participating and sharing. Cowardice. The trap here is being overprepared. If all you do is make sure that bad things don't happen, the ultimate bad thing will happen. You won't get anywhere and you'll waste your life. When you want to make an omelet, you have to break some eggs. Accept that risk is an inherent part of life. Accept that it might be more intelligent to keep pushing forward rather than only ensuring you won't slide backwards. Intelligently taking risks can be critical for success, especially if the upside trumps the downside. Planning. The trap here is that you will remain stuck with your plans. Yes, you might make some progress, but whenever things get tough, and they will, you flee. The solution is to build tenacity and embrace pain. Accept that there will always be some pain when executing plans. You might be so optimistic that you see only the positive side of things and completely lose the sight of the negative, the unpleasant, and the pain. This practice can cripple your ability to succeed. Remember, no pain, no gain. Vengeance. When you fight for justice and go around correcting the injustices and punishing people, you might repulse many of them and kill lots of valuable relationships that could be vital for you in your life and career. Not everyone likes working with a policeman. Also, in your world, the right thing is always clearly defined. Unfortunately, this belief robs you of flexibility. The truth is that there are always many perspectives to anything and multiple right paths. If you're inflexible, you might never see them and ultimately never reach your desired destination. Indolence. Because you see everything in balance, avoid conflict, and love the status quo, Your overall behavior seems lazy or nihilistic. You essentially behave like Homer Simpson. You are unable to do anything that would require a change in the world or yourself, whether it's innovation, achievement, or progress. The solution is twofold. Stop fearing change and start caring. When you start caring about something and stop fearing change of the status quo, you will be able to go for it. I realize that while the solutions sound simple, they might be very difficult to implement. For this reason, if you've recognized yourself in one of the types, I recommend you to hire a personal coach to help you work through your specific challenges. A coach can greatly help you, not just in your productivity and business success, but in your personal life as well. Summary of Module 4. Hopefully, you've now gained multiple new perspectives, ideas, and mindsets that will help you to be more productive and successful in work and life. This module increased your productivity intelligence, so now you have a higher awareness and deeper understanding of yourself and productivity. You can use what you've learned here to fine-tune how you apply the previous material, such as the Meta Habit and the Productiveness Framework. In the final fifth module, we will learn 7 additional powerful productivity tools and techniques that you can start using immediately to increase your productivity even more.